Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is 41 News versus Lake County. Mr. Leroch.
May it please the court. Counsel, good morning. We're here today on an appeal of an order granting a motion to dismiss an abstention on a case that was originally filed in the federal court many, many months before the order granting abstention had been delivered. The sole case that was used as the basis for the district court's decision was the Manheim video case, and we felt that the distinctions between that decision and the procedural factors in our case showed that there was error in granting the motion to abstain. The entire argument underlying the basis of abstention, especially Younger abstention, is to prevent a state court defendant from actually being in a position where they try to derail, I think the words used by the court, they try to derail an ongoing state prosecution. And in this instance, this federal plaintiff filed in the federal court to vindicate his federal rights as his choice of forum.
The problem, I think, that I see anyway, maybe you can address this in your case, is that the Supreme Court in 1975 decided Hicks versus Miranda, in which it specifically said this isn't a pure game of, you know, who files first and who files second, and indeed says you need to look to see if anything of substance has happened in the federal proceeding. So even a later filed state court proceeding can lead to Younger abstention. So no matter what we may have said in Manheim or anything else, Hicks is out there, and I don't see why that didn't entitle the district court judge to look at what had really happened, anything of substance, to come to a conclusion, which didn't seem unreasonable. Maybe you can explain why it was unreasonable, that this was a situation where Hicks against Miranda applied.
Well, the situation, as you noted, it's not a race to the courthouse steps. The problem lies in the fact that when a plaintiff chooses the federal forum as the court to vindicate his constitutional rights, he does so for a reason.
Well, I understand that, but unfortunately for your position, I mean, there's a little water under the bridge here. You know, in Hicks, the court sees a countervailing concern, namely the federalism concern that underlies Younger, and says when you've got these two proceedings that are roughly contemporaneous in time, roughly the same issues, you need to present your – I assume you must have presented your federal defenses to the state court. I can't believe you didn't
anything. The unique procedural posture of this case, this plaintiff was in state court, took a non-suit in state court, and then refiled in federal court in accordance with all
– Well, so what? I don't understand.
The impact of that is that that plaintiff has his choice of forum.
Look, you're not responding to Judge Wood's question.
The response would be this case was not in the embryonic stage that they used to explain the Manheim decision. In this case, there was a very elaborate motion to dismiss, which was filed by the county. The court looked at that, evaluated the merits of the case that had been used as the basis of that motion to dismiss, found that this plaintiff was not in privity with any of the other state court plaintiffs, and really evaluated the merits of the entire case. Although the district court's decision is very short, the bottom line is it reflects a very great and in-depth evaluation of the merits of the case, whether or not this plaintiff had the right to be in federal court. That was the subject of the motion to dismiss.
The merits of the case.
Well, it's a much more elaborate evaluation
than... Did he say you had a good constitutional claim?
I think the district court said that the constitutional claims had not been decided as to this federal plaintiff because this federal plaintiff was not in privity with any of the state court plaintiffs.
I thought he said that he couldn't tell whether they were in privity at that time.
Well,
the record was unclear, and why would they not be in privity? They're all these raising the same issues as the co-defendants, and then you bail out of the state court case.
It's not the same. They're different types of businesses, and the district court identified that. They're very different types of businesses.
They're all attacking the same ordinance.
But under the case law, every individual plaintiff of a different nature has the opportunity to present their own evidence, to challenge the findings.
Is there any ownership relationship
or other commercial relationship between you and any of the plaintiffs in that case or defendants in that case?
Myself, absolutely not. And there's no relationship between this, the appellant, and any of the other parties.
Yourself, your client?
None.
Okay.
Zero.
But I want to go back to that. I mean, I think the basic point, though, is that there needs to be some kind of an assessment of how much is enough to have the federal proceeding pass the line that Hicks against Miranda draws. You could say no motions have ever been filed, or you could say only a motion to dismiss, or you could say no actual discovery yet. Maybe there was some rumbling in the background. But there's a line-drawing issue here. And I think the question for us is whether Judge Bucklow's conclusion that when all was said and done, not very much had happened in the federal proceeding, and the state's interest in enforcing its ordinance in the state proceeding was something that Hicks said there's an obligation to respect.
Well, that state interest...
Do you think this is something we review de novo, by the way? Do you think we give any deference to the district judge's assessment of the degree of progress?
I believe the standard of review is de novo, and we've identified that. And I think
usually
that you
with
look,
questions of assessment of trial progress, though, we do give some consideration, some respectful consideration to what the district court decides.
And that's where I feel that we are distinguished from Manheim. If you look at the merits of the case as brought up in the motion to dismiss, and then which was denied, and the subsequent motion to have that reconsidered, or in the alternative to have the court abstain, if that can stand, then no federal plaintiff is safe from not being placed back within the state court system. There was no delay. There was nobody dragging their feet in this case. In fact, the discovery plan that plaintiffs intended to execute was delayed by the successive filing of the motions to dismiss by the county. The county did not want to be in federal court. We did. And this client wanted to be able to fully and fairly present the evidence that it had to support its challenges to the ordinance. Different from any other, different entirely from the cabarets, which had raised the other matters in state court, and which Judge Bucklew even identified that distinction. They're entirely different types of businesses.
Right, no, I can see that. I guess the main point, though, is, I mean, I think you're overstating it to say nobody can ever be in federal court. There are all number of federal cases that get put on a schedule the minute they get filed and progress gets made and summary judgment, you know, discovery goes on. Your case was one for reasons particular to the case that had not gotten that far.
Well, what this would do then is this would allow the uncooperative state defendant to file successive motions to dismiss, dissipate the resources of the private plaintiff, and then put them in a position where on the eve, this trial was supposed to begin in January, this was in December that the ruling was made, to have them delayed from having their trial and then be forced to undergo the shall we say, unfair result of having to go to state court and start all over again.
There's another angle here, which is that the county would have sued you and you would have, before you went into federal court, if it hadn't been for this state court suit that you and the other companies brought.
The county had every opportunity to file suit at any time.
Well, once you sued them in state court, there was no point in the county's suing you. The issue of the legality of the ordinance would be determined in that suit.
Well, the county's taken the position that they could have initiated enforcement actions regardless of the challenge. That challenge was in state court.
What would have been the point? What would have been the point? Once you and the others sort of jumped the gun and sued in state court to enjoin the ordinance, it was perfectly sensible for the county to wait to sue you until the legality of the ordinance was determined, right? They're perfectly sensible.
I agree with that.
You can't, I mean, you're sort of playing this game. First you sue in state court to delay the county's enforcement action. Then you drop out of the state court suit and jump into federal court, and then you argue that because you're in federal court before the county brings its enforcement action, you should be allowed to stay there.
Well, I would respectfully resist that.
I don't know why that should succeed.
The nature of the suit is that this plaintiff sought to have his federal rights vindicated in federal court. There was no delay. And the original lawsuit's
and
not to delay.
I understand that if the state had brought an enforcement suit first, you'd be completely lost under Younger.
That would be subject to Younger.
The only reason it didn't bring it first is that you sued first in state court.
But there's an opportunity for them to sue.
Why did you sue in state court if you're so eager for a federal forum?
I inherited the case after it had been filed in state court.
Personally, why your client? Why did the client do that?
I have no idea.
Well, it was a mistake, right?
I didn't think it was a good decision.
Right, absolutely, but you're stuck with it.
This plaintiff is not stuck with it, though. This plaintiff took a non-suit and filed in federal court.
I think it is.
Can I ask you, I thought that the same attorneys represented a lot of the different defendants in that, or plaintiffs in that state court action.
Originally, the state court action included both types of businesses. There were the cabaret businesses and the bookstore businesses, and they were all represented by the same attorney. Mm-hmm. I inherited the case when it was on appeal, and the original state court issued an order granting a motion for judgment on the pleadings. Our argument to the state appellate court was that we should have an opportunity to put on our evidence to show that the findings upon which this legislation is based are faulty, that the studies and the evidence are flawed, and we should have an opportunity, and the Supreme Court's agreed with us, to put on whatever evidence we think will be relevant to challenge that. The bookstores, one of the bookstores dropped out early and there was a judgment against them, but not on the merits of anything. They never showed up. The other bookstore, 41 News, was unhappy with the tenor of the state court proceedings. The owner of that business was in ill health, and the state court judge allowed a non-suit of this party in that case. There was a period of time, almost a year, if the county had wanted to, quote, go after, end quote, this business, they had many months to do so. This business then went to federal court, went through the response to the motions to dismiss.
Okay, we understand.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Your time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Jessica?
Good morning. Lake County Assistant State's Attorney Daniel Jessica on behalf of Appellee County of Lake. May it please the court. The county is following, based on Ciotti and Mannheim Video, a well-defined path to compel the federal court plaintiff to assert and to raise their constitutional challenges to the county's adult use ordinance in the ongoing state court enforcement action.
Could I just ask, the county filed, Mr. Kingsley, filed this letter indicating that the state court enforcement action is now on appeal, basically, right? So I take it that 41 News did, as Mr. Lero said, raise its federal constitutional defenses.
Absolutely.
In that action.
As affirmative defenses to the ongoing enforcement action, they raised two affirmative defenses. Those affirmative defenses are that the ordinance violates equal protection, which is count one in their federal claim, and the second affirmative defense was that the county lacked an adequate factual or evidentiary predicate to adopt the ordinance, which was count two of the federal court action. So not only can they raise their constitutional claims in the ongoing enforcement action, they have raised those claims. To address the letter, that was the status of the case is still in front of the trial court. We were last Thursday up expecting a final judgment to be entered. It was not entered. So for purposes of Younger abstention, it remains today an ongoing proceeding at the state court trial level. 41 News has made an argument that they are entitled to a federal court forum. I think that's both factually inaccurate and legally irrelevant. It's factually inaccurate because, as the court has pointed out, for 5 years, 41 News litigated the constitutionality of the county's ordinance in state court from November of 1998 through November of 2003. That was their first primary preferred forum.
Now, I mean, that's certainly a fact about this case, but if in fact, by the time Judge Bucklow ruled, there had been extensive discovery in the federal court action, there had been perhaps a motion for summary judgment, what have you, Wouldn't that preclude Hicks versus Miranda slash Younger abstention at that point?
It would absolutely. I'm sorry. It would absolutely preclude Younger abstention. I mean, the alternate argument of res judicata would still exist, but I would agree. If this had been a case where there had been discovery, but it wasn't, if this had been a case where there had been depositions, but there weren't, if this had been a case where there was a motion for summary judgment or evidentiary hearings that had taken place, then clearly it had proceeded on the merits in substance and beyond its embryonic stage, and therefore Younger abstention wouldn't be appropriate. But that's not the fact pattern that was presented in this case.
Well, what's your response to Mr. Laureau's argument that this might encourage abusive use of motions to dismiss and dragging things out in the trial court and the like? I mean, what's the remedy for that? I mean, clearly nobody applauds that kind of
thing. The remedy is what they could have done up front. If they wished to secure their federal forum, they could have come in for a preliminary injunction. They didn't. Alternatively, they could have not violated the county's ordinance. They could have been in compliance with it while they challenged it in federal court. So that is the mechanism by which they could have secured their federal forum.
But when First Amendment rights are at issue, we don't always say, you know, you have to give up your First Amendment rights while an enforcement action. But you think if they come in for a preliminary injunction, that too would have been enough to have gotten over this embryonic stage?
I think yes, because it would have been the trial court making some assessment of the merits of the constitutional claims, which is never what occurred. All that occurred in the motion to dismiss that the county filed was, are they bound, based on their participation in the XLP case, are they precluded from relitigating those claims? But the county never reached, excuse me, the court never reached the merits of those constitutional claims.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, this is one of those rare instances where Younger applies, where the federal court plaintiff can be compelled to litigate in the state, or in this case, in the county's preferred forum, which is the Lake County Circuit Court. And I know 41 News has argued that their claims are constitutional in nature, that they're First Amendment claims in nature, but there's no sliding scale that I'm aware of from any authority that suggests that Younger applies with less vigor when there are First Amendment claims or constitutional claims. In point of fact, Younger sort of presumes that there are pending federal constitutional claims. And they will have more than an adequate opportunity to pursue those claims in state court, and they are pursuing those claims. They have raised the affirmative defenses. The constitutional claims have been raised in the state court proceeding. There is no bar. It's not like a state court administrative tribunal where sometimes there is a question about whether that tribunal can consider the constitutional claims. Not present here. They have argued, and they will continue to argue, that they are distinct from XLP, that decision doesn't bind them. Whether or not they prevail on that argument is irrelevant. They are able to make that argument.
Yes. Okay, you've said that.
And ultimately, the question of res judicata applies whether they're in state court or in federal court. And in fact, the federal court would be applying state court standards for whether res judicata applies. The facts in Ciotti and Mannheim video, I think it's noteworthy that the federal court plaintiffs raised exactly the same argument that 41 News is raising here, that by the court considering a motion to dismiss, it's now moved beyond the embryonic stage and Younger can't apply. The court in both those cases rejected that argument, and I think that argument gets rejected here as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jessica. Mr. Laureau, your time has expired. We'll give you a minute if you want it.
Thank you. There are cases.
You didn't say it in your reply brief. You devote like a paragraph to res judicata. You don't actually say anything in it either.
Well, I don't think res judicata.
A long argument, you know, about how broad the concept of privity is under Illinois law. You don't respond to that.
Well, it doesn't apply here because this party has.
Why? I don't understand you.
First of all, there has to be the identities of the actions to apply
that. Why didn't you respond in your reply brief to their res judicata argument? Is it obviously absurd or something like that? Transparently frivolous?
There's just no identity of the parties, and there's never been...
You don't need the... They quote from cases which suggest you don't need identity of parties. In fact, if they're right, Illinois has extremely extremely expansive concept of res judicata.
Well, the concept of race...
About how you maneuver to, you know, by you see the handwriting on the wall, so you drop out of the case. That may not get you out from under the judgment that's entered.
The handwriting on the wall, if it indicates that there's a lack of fundamental fairness in a state court forum, which is clearly something that's discussed about the case, finding abstention to be something that's applied in only extraordinary circumstances, that's the issue. If a plaintiff decides that they're not going to get...
You made a case for fundamental unfairness.
Well, I think in this case that we have, because under the concept of res judicata that you want me to address, that means that that specific party would have to have a full and fair opportunity to present its own evidence to challenge the legislation.
Why didn't you have that full and fair opportunity in the state court?
It's just not the forum that we want to be in. It's a Lake County judge with...
You don't want to be there. That's not the same thing as not having a fair opportunity to present your case.
I think the facts of our state court experience have pointed that out. The state court has never allowed this plaintiff to present anything, either evidentiary or otherwise, to challenge this legislation. And again, applying that broad concept of res judicata, this plaintiff has never had a chance to put on evidence to challenge this legislation. Didn't do it in the state court proceedings in XLP, didn't get a chance to do it in federal court because of the multiple motions to dismiss, and they haven't had the opportunity to do it in this state court because the state court judge, again, embracing that broad concept of res judicata, says, you know, you're no different than anybody else. They've never had their day to put on evidence. No one's ever had the opportunity to evaluate that evidence. That's why res judicata doesn't apply.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Very much for the privilege.
And Mr. Jessica?